Good evening and welcome to this special broadcast. It is brought to you by Government Communication and Information System. It is another Wednesday where we are looking into gender-based violence, but this time around focusing much on the gender violence summit that has been going on from yesterday until today. And still, actually, I was listening to some of the panelists before I got on air now, talking about the reports that were given, one of them being that report from the police. And we will talk more about the processes that went through there and the discussions that went through. Also, looking into this as the second summit since 2018. It feels like 2018 was just last year, and simply because we had almost a year and a half of lockdown, and that summit took place before we could even know about the coronavirus pandemic. So there is quite a lot to discuss, because the pandemic itself during the lockdown, it has a whole lot of components that actually feature much into gender-based violence. But welcome. Thank you so very much for joining us. My name is Mosotho Stone, and we are with you up until 7 o'clock. So tonight we are expected to be joined in discussion by the three ladies, Ms. Busisi Wemkwanyana, or who was speaking to us last time about the gender-based command center, gender-based violence command centers, as well as Tracy Cotton. She's the CEO at the Mental Health Initiatives and co-chairperson of the Pillar 4 NSP on GBVF. Well, I'm just acronyming everything there, but she will be able to elaborate a whole lot about that. And I believe, Gavin, we have Dr. Omar on the telephone tonight. Good evening, Dr. Omar.
Good evening to you and all the listeners. Thank you.
Thank you so very much, and welcome to this special broadcast. And you are also welcome to give us a call with your comments or with your questions on 0800-142-446, 0800-142-446. And maybe let's just focus on talking, how far is the war against gender-based violence in your community? Give us a clue. Because government is doing summits, government is having a command center, government is having all these different stakeholders that are working in mediating as well as campaigning against gender-based violence. So we will get to hear more about the summit as I get my guests to introduce themselves. Trace?
Thank you, Mosotho. It's very it's good to be here after a very exciting 2 days of summit. So I'm arriving here on a bit of a high from many months of preparation to be here today. My name is Tracy Cotton, as you've said. I'm the CEO of the Mental Wellness Initiative. I'm a sociologist by profession and co-convener of Pillar 4. And I'll pause there, but I'll be very happy to explain what Pillar 4 does.
We will speak more about that. Sis Busi? Right.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mosotho. My name is Busi, as I have been introduced. I'm Busisi Wemkwanyana. I'm a social worker by profession. I'm working for the National Department of Social Development as a social work supervisor at the Gender-Based Violence Command Center.
Thank you so much. And we also have Dr. Omar, as you had on the telephone, greeting our listeners. And also from the telephone, simply because she has been part of the gender-based summit. Right, Doctor?
That is correct. I have. And I have been fighting for children's rights for the past 3 decades. So today is a momentous occasion in the lives of the nation, in the lives of our children. It's a turning point. Thank you.
Thank you so very much. Now, the Gender-Based Violence Command Center also operates under the Department of Social Development. And we will hear a lot about the inputs that they have made into the summit as well. And also get to emphasize on the numbers as well as the interaction for those who would like to take up a responsibility of just speaking up, breaking the silence, you know, all those. So, Tracy, let's just maybe let's start giving an overview of what the summit actually, it's quite a lot to think that there's quite a lot of things to do, especially after 4 years, and that 4 years being influenced also by the pandemic and the lockdown and all that stuff. Give us your abstract on that one.
Well, I think that pandemic aside, the summit should happen. I'm of the opinion that maybe even every 2 years, so we can take more frequent measurements of our progress.
Mm-hmm.
The program was very full. And I think so all of the attendees could locate themselves in some or other conversations that were happening. And the discussions that took place were robust. There was quite some interrogation leveled at ministers and other dignitaries who came to speak. I'm walking away with the sense that the struggle is going to be a long one.
Mm-hmm.
It's an intense one. But this, personally, this is the hill I am prepared to die on. Mm-hmm. This is the work I'm prepared to give myself, my skills, and my career to, because I can't think of a worthier cause to fight for.
Yes. All right. If you've just joined us, this is about the GBV Summit. And we are talking to Tracy Cotton. We are talking to Busi Nkwanyana. We're talking to Dr. Omar. And in your perspective, Sis Busi, what are we looking at? Because, I mean, this is an old problem. And the command center is actually closer to what the people are actually expressing. So far, is there any change that we should be looking into with regards to, it seems to be manifesting itself as something that Tracy is saying, it's a long struggle. But now, what are the people saying through the command center? What is it that we get? What is the pulse of the command center?
Actually, the clients are still crying. It is still a long way because gender-based violence cannot only be fought by social workers or police.
Yes.
It's actually a community struggle. It means, since the president has declared it a pandemic, it means everyone should stand up and work and fight the scourge of GBV.
Yes.
We are there as the command center, as a support system to the victims, to ensure that we educate the community and the public about GBV and the public about their rights when it comes to GBV.
Yes.
And protect children and victims. And also we are there as the command center to ensure that we also help in rehabilitating the perpetrators of GBV. Because GBV does not just happen overnight.
Yes.
It is a cycle. It starts somewhere. And then it grows. And then when you see it manifesting, it's not something that just started today. It's something that has been long coming, and it built up until this monster is fully completed. Then it manifests into physical, emotional, sexual violence and stuff. So I really feel that there is so much to do, and we need all the stakeholders to come together. From when a child comes to crèche, that's when the education on GBV then should go. The education, the security, the psychosocial support from DSD, the Department of Health. So everyone should come in so that we can fight the scourge of gender-based violence.
All right. And we also have Dr. Shaida Omar, who's also the director at the Teddy Bear Clinic. And she's at the GBV Summit as we speak. Dr. Omar, let's talk about your perspective of what do you think the summit achieved so far?
So I think I'm totally excited. I was deflated yesterday because if we just cast our minds to the summit in 2018, children were not part of that process. Children were not included. Children's voices were voiceless. And many children, as we know, have continued to suffer, have been murdered, have been brutalized, have been victimized in horrendous ways. And the National Strategic Plan focused on violence against women and violence against children. However, during the processes, children were not included. Children know nothing about us without us. So they were not part of this journey. They were not part of this process. And a few weeks ago, we were given the green light to organize a children's summit, so a pre-summit to the GBV National Summit, which we organized at the last minute, and we brought in children from the 9 provinces. And it was absolutely amazing to listen to the fears, the anxieties, the concerns raised by children, but even more importantly, the recommendations made by the children. And listening to those recommendations and resolutions which were tabled at this summit today. Yesterday, they were taken off the program, which was, as when I said, we were very despondent, deflated, and almost self-flagellated because we brought in three child ambassadors from the different provinces. And one of the children is the president of the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund, and NMCF Children's Parliament. And then we have a deputy representative and another representative from Northwest Province and the Western Cape. So today they actually participated. They were part of the caucus action group on the Children's Caucus Action Group, where they tabled a lot of the resolutions, but were later given a platform in the plenary, in the big plenary, where they expressed the heartfelt challenges on the ground, where their voices were heard for the first time, and that there's been a strong recommendation, a compelling recommendation, that the seventh pillar, we currently are working according to six pillars, but they raised very strongly that the seventh pillar needs to be added to the structure, which will focus strictly on children. And I think that is something very important, and that's why I say this today is a momentous occasion where children's voices have come to the fore, where people have actually heard them. Children have been hurt, but it's the first time that they've been given a platform to be heard. So we are very excited. We know that this is only going to bring positive change, that their voices are a change maker. Yes, we know it's a journey, it's a process. We cannot expect things to change overnight, but we do believe that we steering and navigating in the right direction.
Very profound indeed. Dr. Shaira Omar, somebody's asking me about the pronunciation of your surname by it's O-M-A-R, right?
That's correct. Yes.
Oh, yes, that is it. Those who are listening from the community radio stations, sometimes we don't get to hear the pronunciation properly for our reporting purposes. So, quite very interesting that this time around, the inclusion of the children's voices, as you say, Dr. Omar, is quite of paramount importance. But now, let's talk the trauma. I'm interested in the trauma that is a result of many incidents created by adults. Are you able to tell us about the trauma that most of the time children get to experience through all these different incidents? We cannot mention all of them, but everything all in all happens to be some gruesome process that we don't really want to be focusing too much on. Tell us about how we are dealing with the trauma of assisting kids and supporting them and making sure that in the process, you know, some of them, they've lost both parents, some of them, the other parent is in jail, the other one has passed on. You know, there's quite a lot of incidents and examples that I could make. But, you know, from your perspective, let's talk about that trauma part.
Very important. So children can be direct or indirect victims of gender-based violence, domestic violence, the intimate partner violence, where children may not be inflicted with any kind of physical injury, but the emotional torment, the emotional turmoil, and what they hear and what they see without being heard physically can have devastating and long-lasting implications, even where they are physically inflicted. So just to give you an idea, we worked with a five-year-old last year where the five-year-old witnessed her biological father using a revolver, shooting the mother five times until she collapsed and succumbed to death. This five-year-old lost her speech, what we call elective mutism. So she, because of the trauma, because of what she saw, and it was difficult for her to process, difficult for any adult or any individual to process that kind of bludgeoning, she she lost her speech. She refused to eat. She was having recurrent nightmares. She stopped attending the ECD facility she was going to. She was placed in the care of her maternal grandmother, who actually brought her to the Teddy Bear Foundation for Abused Children for intervention. So the kind of intervention we provide for little children is play therapy, because it's a natural medium of communication for any ills or perceived hurts. This child did not participate or engage with toys, did not engage with the therapist. After 3 months, this child started drawing, scribbling, and she took a red crayon. She broke the crayon, but she pointed and she made these sounds, pointing, just like the sounds that made that were shots fired. Hmm. With slow intervention, she started talking, but she was bedwetting. She was having recurrent nightmares, loss of appetite, a lack of interest in things around her. Now, this child's father is now in jail. He was charged, convicted, sentenced. So the multiple losses, one needs to just try and unpack and interrogate what she's been subjected to and look at the possibilities of long-term implications, where she's going to grow up knowing fully well that her father murdered her mother. She lost her mother. She's lost her father. So she's an orphan. She doesn't have her biological parents any longer. And the fact that she was then in a position to undergo court preparation and to testify, you can imagine the burden that has been placed on this child, and that she's got to live with these haunted images and memories, but also process that because she testified, there was evidence supporting that her father murdered the mother. So the possibilities of the future and her trajectory being destroyed or disrupted, one cannot predict. She could grow up to be a substance abuser, self-mutilator, self-harming herself, depression. I mean, I can just go on. The possibilities are endless. So this is what children are subjected to. We see a lot of children that are in a home where there's constant altercations, physical abuse, beatings that they witness. And we find that they actually reenact what they've seen at home, because it's normalized. They actually get programmed into dealing with conflict in that manner. So when they find themselves in a threatening situation, an anxiety-provoking situation, what are they likely to do? They are likely to reenact what is on their foreground, what is on the foreground of the brain. And you find that is what they would do. They would beat up, they would bully, they would violate, they would demonstrate aggression. Or sometimes other children would just withdraw and isolate themselves and harm themselves and lose interest in school, poor concentration, so attention span decreasing. These are some of the manifestations, and they are very serious because it impacts very harshly on the life of their child.
That is the voice of Dr. Shahida Omar, and she is at the GBV Summit as we speak, and also is the director of the Teddy Bear Clinic. As we are speaking, the impact of gender-based violence on children, the trauma that they go through, the mental health that goes along with it, which I'm going to come to you, Trace, about speaking to the mental health initiatives, the organization that you're leading, to say Dr. Omar is highlighting quite a number of issues that are directly speaking to the issues of mental health. And what's your take on that? That sounds very drastic.
Yeah, well, it's not drastic. I'm listening to Shahida, but thinking through the lens of my childhood, and I won't bring all of that to the fore now, but suffice it to say that I resonated very much with a lot of the descriptions that she was describing the short and long term effects on children. And there is this fallacy that children bounce back. It's one of those old school notions that children can just absorb and absorb and absorb.
It is a fallacy, indeed.
And that they bounce back, but they don't bounce back. They are permanently affected and sometimes irrevocably affected. There's quite a lot of work in the neuroscience professions now, which I'm not an expert on, but I will mention that it permanently rewires the way your brain looks structurally and therefore can have permanent effect on your behaviors. And what Shahid is describing in the way those behaviors show up again in adulthood. Mm-hmm. And then I want to link that to the idea of perpetration of violence in general and then perpetration of GBV violence, mm-hmm. that there are absolute linkages between childhood trauma and perpetration of violence in general in adulthood, because those things remain unprocessed. And as Shahida said, your brain then reverts to drawing on what is sitting on the foreground of itself. And so there are linkages there, but I'll pause for now.
Thank you so much for that reflection. That is Tracy Cotton, the CEO of the Mental Health Initiatives and co-chairperson of Pillar 4, which we're going to talk much about on the National Social Program on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide. Remember, you are also welcome to join our discussion on 0800-142-446, 0800-142-446. Otherwise, if you are shy to make live commentary, you are welcome to send a text or a voice note on 065-935-5488. You are welcome. And particularly maybe just contribute to updating us in terms of the community that you're living in and how much is done against gender-based violence and femicide. Remember, we also have traditional communities, we have religious communities, we have different kinds of communities in South Africa, and we know that South Africa is a diverse country, it's a democratic country, but we all are faced with one big pandemic that actually puts us together, irrespective of our color, creed, and tradition and religion. So 0800-142-446, and tell us about your experience in your area. And Sisbusi, I want to attach what Dr. Shahida Omar as well as Tracy Cotton is saying with regards to, it is quite a concern to be having future citizens, as in like children, having to be molded by challenges such as gender-based violence, in which I fail to even imagine 20 years. Because if anybody is born today on the 2nd of November and 20 years down the line experienced 4 counts of gender-based violence, which is something that is starting to be a bit more normal in South Africa. I mean, if you don't see it in your home, you see it somewhere next where there is an alcohol place. You see it somewhere where there's a squabble between a soccer match, male-to-male violence, and all those kind of violence that we experience. Now, the command center seems to be giving us a pulse of when do we get to have many calls, when, why, and what would have happened? How? What is your experience in terms of the calls that you get, particularly in any given day of the week, comparing to weekends, and what are the trends, basically?
Basically, the trend is that on a daily basis, we receive calls of GBV. Mm-hmm. It might be perpetrators, and also victims. Mm-hmm. We receive calls from concerned persons. We receive calls from victims of GBV. We also receive calls from perpetrators of GBV. Mm-hmm. Just like Dr. Omar has already alluded to the fact that if a child has experienced GBV, that child, if they grow up under adverse conditions, mm-hmm. they are highly likely to become abusers themselves, because they grew up in an environment where they saw that abuse is normal to them. Mm. It starts by scaring them up until they get used to that every Friday, this is what is going to happen. They grow up hating the violence because it's frustrating to them when they observe it. But now, most of the cases that we receive from perpetrators, you would find a gentleman saying, You know, I grew up in an environment where my father used to hit my mother all the weekends. We would not sleep. I hated him so much. But now, since I'm an adult, immediately when I start consuming alcohol and there's a conflict between myself and my spouse, I don't even know what would have happened. I would find myself hitting my wife, and I don't like that because it used to traumatize me as a child. So you can see from such colors that childhood experiences are contributory factors to perpetrators of GBV. And also the calls that we would get on a normal circumstances, it's children that would call experiencing GBV at home, all sorts of child abuse, and also reporting that my mother currently, as I'm speaking, is being beaten by my father currently as we speak. So those are the cases that we would receive. And also we would receive cases on holidays. When there is holidays, we receive quite a number of cases in the command center because people would be excited during holidays, consuming alcohol, and after that, the alcohol would lead to GBV happening. So we receive cases every day, but on weekends, the cases would escalate. But sometimes during festive season, we would not receive quite a large number of cases. Like on Christmas Day and New Year, sometimes we would not receive cases because people are having fun. It's nice. But immediately after the New Year's Day, the following day, when reality hits, then now the conflict starts, then we receive an escalated number of cases. So it differs on this kind of holidays.
I am just imagining that just after New Year's, nobody's got money. So it can be quite a bit stressful. And particularly, men don't like looking good without money. So, I'm talking from a personal perspective to say, it gets a bit harder if you don't have money after. But yeah, it can make you a bit grumpy. It can make you. But what do we do? Or how do we channel our mentalities? How do we manage this mental mammoth, you know, that Busi is alluding to saying, somebody calls and say, "Ish, after I just have two drinks, man, Tracy, this woman starts irritating me," or something like that, you know. And it is not my nature, but I find myself not being in a position to control myself. Now, how does one approach that mentally, managing such kind of things? How the basics, because sometimes it can be quite a bit complicated to just diagnose yourself and manage yourself and stuff. But what would be the basics? What would you advise our communities to start thinking about when feelings like such as violence start cropping up in them and all that stuff?
We need 10 more conversations just like this to start scratching the surface.
And ours just not.
It's not.
Yeah.
But I think I want to address something that is a second fallacy. Mm. And that fallacy being that you only social workers or psychologists are credible helping professions.
Mm.
In fact, helping professions are available in a number of guises. Traditional leaders have been sidelined in favor of these professions. And I keep putting them in inverted commas, and I know your listeners can't see me. And I say that because we've sidelined traditional African healing practices for these other quote-unquote Western biomedical healing practices.
Mm.
And so I'd like to say to people that if they can't access a psychologist, a social worker, and many, I would say the majority of the people in this country cannot access those professions, seek help where it is available to you. So from a faith-based person, any faith-based person, not any faith-based person, but any faith, or all faiths have got helping professionals within them. The traditional practice, as I've said, there are lots of complementary healing modalities.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to speak for a moment, especially to men.
Yes.
And I want to make a confession that I think is something that is a long overdue conversation that needs to happen. And that is that men have been wounded by this notion of patriarchy as much as women have been.
Very, very true.
And patriarchy has robbed men of the permission and the language to process their emotions. There are no safe spaces, and it's slowly changing now, so I will acknowledge that it's changing. But there are very few safe spaces where a man can go and say, hey, I'm really struggling and I need help. Mm. Patriarchy denies him that. It denies him the language of it. And so I'm oversimplifying it now, but one can understand that frustrations build inevitably, and with very little resources to process their emotions, those frustrations do end up in all sorts of negative behaviors. And so I'm speaking to the men of the nation when I say that seek help from a helping professional before it gets to boiling point, before you hurt the person you love most. By the time you come to a helping professional, it may be you are already in handcuffs. And we don't want to lose any more men to the prison system and to the justice system. We want our men to be available to raise their children and to love their women and to contribute to the nation. And so I hope that they will hear me and seek help where it is available to them. Yep, I'm going to leave it there.
All right. Thank you so very much, Tracy Cotton. She's responsible for an organization that is called Mental Health Initiatives.
Mental Wellness Initiative.
Oh, they wrote to
it's,
me.
No, mental it's fine. Health. It's fine. Well, I get called Patricia from time to time, so it's all good. It's all good.
That is very, very, very... All right. Dr. Shaida, let's talk more about the deliberations at the summit now. Mm-hmm. And in terms of... there was inroads with regards to children being highlighted as well. But now we're finding ourselves having to deal with even more gruesome acts of violence. You know, in 96, it used to be something else. In 2006, now it's a bit more violent. In 2016, it is something else. And lately, we hear somebody who's capable of hanging a pregnant woman. And it escalates. The more we keep talking, the more I ask myself, if we have Tracy, if we have Dr. Shaida Omar, if we have Busisi, if we have Mosotho Stone, in 2022, what makes it escalate? Is the summit actually speaking, or are there any other reports that actually speak towards, you know, dealing with the escalation of the violence rather than the betterment of the society?
So I think we need to understand and appreciate that we cannot just provide intervention without appreciating that prevention is key. So it's prevention, early intervention, and intervention. And if we reflect on the summit, I think the summit has taken cognizance of the brutalities, of the heinous crimes that have been committed. And the important thing to realize is that, you know, we go back more than three decades, and it seems like we are, you know, the music changes, but the lyrics continue to remain the same. Women continue to be marginalized, perpetrated against, and that women and children continue to remain the most vulnerable groups. So in the second summit, I think these things have been tabled. If we look at Pillar 4 specifically in terms of care, response, and support in the healing context, of course, that needs to continue. And I think that is supported by all. We all agree. But the focus now is looking at prevention. And I'm going to shift this debate a little bit, because I think what is key, what Tracy highlighted, Sis Busi highlighted, a very key aspect in a multifaceted, multidimensional, multidisciplinary approach is required, where all sectors of society, government, civil society, community-based organizations, your faith-based organization, everybody, your community or barefoot community workers, people that are there on the cold front, we need to work collectively, because this is a collaboration, a coordination, and ensuring that there's integration of the different approaches. So I want to express, because I come from the children's sector, I think it is important to articulate that where do we actually start? Because it has to be an ecological framework. We need to look at the micro level, we need to look at the meso level, and we need to look at the macro. So the summit has certainly created a platform to look at micro, meso, and macro, looking at legislation and policy. Is it responding to what is happening? And if we look at the pillar three, the justice, I mean, criminal justice, I think certainly has addressed the three bills on GBV, where, you know, that there's going to be changes. It's one is already implemented. The other two are going to be implemented. It's sitting in Parliament. So I think there's been a lot of progress, but work. So we need to work on different levels simultaneously. We cannot start and work, you know, like earlier on about the fragmentation, the coordination has to be there. So as we speak, we need to start communicating with our children from a very tender age, from the time they've developed vocabulary, when they, you know, a few words from 2.5 and above. You start talking to children about their rights, their responsibilities, acceptable behaviors, unacceptable behaviors, safe touches, unsafe touches. But, because that's with children, at the same time, for potential mothers to be, whether they're teenagers, adolescents, or they're adults, the moment they come to an antenatal clinic, there needs to be programs and opportunities created, because parenting does not come with an instruction manual. So obviously communication, not only with the mothers, but also seeking out platforms where you can bring the teen fathers, the older fathers to be, also engaging on rights, responsibilities, and speaking them through that, and making them aware of what is acceptable, what is not acceptable, what does the law speak to, but also analyzing values and attitudes. So is it okay for a male to punch a female? Will it be acceptable if the female punches the male? Is it okay for a male to have multiple partners? And often the responses we get from children, yes, the father can have more than one partner, but definitely a vehement no, it's not acceptable for the mother. So again, we need to look at this re-socialization. We need to start talking to our girls and our women, because who are the primary nurturers and caregivers? It's mothers. Who are actually indoctrinating behaviors, instilling values in children? It's the mothers. Where does the stereotypes come from? Girls are treated in this way, boys are treated in that way. Boys don't clean houses, they don't cook. Girls, that's an expectation. Boys, you can go and study, we'll take out money for you, but girls can, you know, they'll come second. And I think we need to have those conversations and dialogues on different levels. So we need to also bring in the private sector here. And how do we bring in the private sector? Any employment association, whoever is employing an individual, there needs to be platforms created where dialogues are provided, where they learn about their rights, their responsibilities, where they can reach out to, how they can reach out, but at the same time, resources for supportive intervention. It's not about disintegrating families or destroying families. It's about how can we bring them together? How can we reconstruct and reunify and ensure that the healing takes place and that there is a breakdown in the cycle, a disruption? And I think those are the kind of dialogues we need to have. So workplaces are an ideal setting where the employers, you know, that they need to be incentivized. Like with the triple BEE, we need to have also incentivization that if they have regular dialogues with their employees, and it's not just the wellness program, but part of the wellness program that they can reach out, but they are also empowered, enlightened, and when there are impulse control issues, they are given an opportunity to reach out with sensitivity, confidentiality, and ensure that there's continued intervention. So this is a systemic issue which requires a systemic response. We cannot just single out one thing and expect, even in the school platforms, this needs to be worked with learners across, from junior to senior high school. But at the same time, we need to educate our educators on how to address the gendered norms and values, you know, because their approach as well, their attitude, it needs to be unpacked, where one needs to come into contact and understand and do introspection about certain belief systems and, of course, how that impacts and influences behaviors. So I can go on. I see I'm quite passionate about the subject, but I want to say that this is a holistic, integrated, multifaceted, multidisciplinary approach where it's not just a single department, but multi-departments that need to come into action and work together. When we say work together, they actually need to communicate, because if we look at our legislation, the pieces of legislation, some of them contradict each other because they are developing isolation, silos and pockets, you know, they work like that.
Yeah,
instead of talking to each other, and that's what we need to do. We need to start communicating.
All right. Thank you so very much. Quite very prominent points that Dr. Shaida is actually highlighting. I wish we had 10 hours, Tracy, but
yes,
unfortunately, the summit is actually the one that's doing 10 hours to 12 hours. And since the summit in 2018, South African authorities have taken up some positive steps. We know different things. The command center is one of those direct supportive components of our interventions, and also, you know, the acts that are being put in place, the Domestic Violence Act of 1998, you know, to make it easier for victims to get protection orders. You know, back then, I mean, Dr. Shaida is highlighting that, you know, there are some loopholes, you know, there's some gray areas, as if, like, you know, this devil called gender-based violence is actually very clever enough for us to actually keeps on evading the inroads that are being, the criminal law on sexual offenses and related matters, the Amendment Act of it, the Criminal and Related Matters Amendment Act, all those are in place. The fact is, human beings, are they in place? But let's just get to hear from one Connell from Richards Bay. Hello, Connell. Siyaphila kunjani baba?
God, I have today 2 points I want to make today.
Please.
Protection order sometimes I see. Once you own this was an one bombing, I'm a person keep a protection by the Mundus lease. Protection order is just a piece of paper. I intend Mundus lease, which I saw the Mundus for an undermass. Manjani ukuthi lo muntu aboshwe aphume nge-bail mhlambe my point ukuthi kusabona ukuthi akidlalwa la ngoba sometimes protection order uyebona ngathi umdlalo amanye amaphoyisa ethi ake ngixoxe
bese yabuya futhi azosiphindisela
yabuya futhi azoyiphindiselela ethi azombuzela amaphoyisa mhlambe kuba ngcono uma benje umuntu uma esuka lesembikile ukuthi nazo sibani bani engihlukunyeza ukuthi bamthathe bamgqoma ejele thethwe idala.
All right.
Yeah, and another point I want to emphasize, mhlambe ke GBV summit ke mhlambe kube khona immense dialogue engahambela indawo
sokuthola
khona abantu besilisa mhlambe bangaya ema stadium bafundiswa babe khona nezithombe ama short film akhombisa nge GBV ukuthi into ekanjani bangaya nasemathaveni noma ukuthi lapho kugcwele khona abantu besilisa even emsebenzini ama training beke bebizwe nje befundiswe ngalento. Sometimes abanye bayayihlahla uma sebeyibona sikhona buki ama-free-filling ezobuyenzeka phambi kwabo mhlawumbe angaqala bagwaye abantu besilisa ukuthi-ke kuyingozi ukuhlukumeza abantu besifazane mhlawumbe sibe nama-inroads-ke amamedalo
alrightrank
angafundiswa.
Yes, yes. Very, very true. But Connell, thank you so very much for your contribution. Ngiyabonga kakhulu. And let's hear what our panel of guests have to say. Siyabonga. Sis Bus?
Ngicabanga ukuthi kubaluleke kakhulu lokho. Siyabonga but Connell Richards Bay ukuthi uze ne suggestion. Kubalulekile, sinawo ama forums in each and every province, the Department of Social Development.
We even joke about this men's conference and something that should be doing quite more than joking.
Exactly. We actually need these men conferences
to happen really and be clear.
La ukuthi abantu besilisa bazohlala phansi baxoxe about issues that are affecting them. Basizakale kulawo ma conferences. We do have such forums in our local communities. So social development unayo in the VEP section of each and every office, Department of Social Development, where we have men's forum, men and boys. It's not just men, it's men and boys.
Yes.
Where we sit down and have a conversation with men. But I think we should even promote it even more to have a men's conference, to have a men's dialogue. La abantu besilisa bazokhona ukuthi bahlale phansi khona
and not make it an excuse to run from Valentine's Day, because normally that's what we talk about.
Exactly. We talk about men's conference when it's Valentine's Day and they have to
give love. When it's time to give love, that's when we start running off and saying, men's conference. Some imaginary idea that South African men have actually embraced.
Exactly.
And for me, my personal opinion is that should be leveraged. And because Ukonel is actually saying, Tracy and Shaida, that is there a component within the gender-based violence summit that focuses on, you know, grooming, shaping men into what the society requires of us? And if that is not part of the summit, then it could be very detrimental to the efforts that are being made. Don't you think?
Indeed, I think it's important for everybody to understand that this summit actually spoke about engaging men and boys, and some of the organizations that are already doing work on the ground participated, organizations like Songke Gender Justice. So it is already happening. I cannot say it's moving at the pace we'd like it to, but I think there's more awareness around the critical engagement of men and boys. And I think we value what the caller has stated, and it's something that will certainly be flagged as an essential way forward.
You know, despite all these strides, Tracy, you know, and all this apparent political will and all these different things, you know, we still find it rampant in South Africa that it's normal. And it starts, for me, when I think of it, it starts with us reprimanding a kid to say, don't do that. I'll smack you. And the language that you spoke about starts right there. Now, how does the National Strategic Plan aims to look into those, as a chairperson of what we call Pillar 4, to those who have child school fees very well. Mm-hmm. But let's talk to those who are not in the know, even if they had their school fees child in other professions. So let's talk about this Pillar 4, the National Strategic Plan on GBV. Let's give us a bit of time so that we get to understand its background and where is it taking us.
Sure. So for the listeners, if you Googled National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence, you would actually find the document. It is a downloadable document. There's also a summary document available, which is about the third of the length of the actual policy. So the public can make themselves familiar with what is in that plan. It's accessible on the internet. It's an easy read. It's not full of professionalized jargon, so it is accessible to the public. So I'll start there. And then I will also mention that there is a website. Now, I got into trouble the other day for saying this incorrectly. So it's www.gbvf.org.za. Shahida, I hope I've got that right. I got into trouble.
Spot on.
Great. Right. And so those are two resources that the public can access to immediately make themselves familiar. So I will say that there are six pillars. Shahida spoke about a campaign to achieve and establish a seventh pillar, but for now there are six pillars. Pillars being a collection of ideas around which we can centralize our activities and coordinate those activities. So for example, pillar 2 focuses on prevention, amongst other things. Pillar 3 is justice. Pillar one is coordination and leadership. Six is research. And pillar four is response, care, support, and healing.
Yes.
So largely the psychosocial response, incorporating things like shelters. So it and then you will see immediately there are linkages to government activities,
mm-hmm.
and then CSOs or NPOs. So CSOs, I don't want to be acronym heavy for the listeners, are yes. community organizations,
yes.
and then nonprofit organizations. And collectively, we can call them civil society. And then we have government structures. So
your youth club, by the way, in the community.
Exactly. Faith-based yeah. organizations are Thank part you. Of that community. And then we have the private sector, which we can call the business community.
Yes.
And then we have the government, which is, again, made up of different structures. So the departments of health, social development, education, monitoring and evaluation, the Department of Women, People with Disabilities. So all of these departments have to work together with these civil society actors, which are the community-based organizations, faith-based schools, anything that is at community level. And so pillar four, again, I'll say it, support, care, response, healing, or response, care, support, healing.
Yes.
We are trying to structure ways in which to help the nation heal and recover, not only from GBV, but we arrived into the GBV situation as a wounded nation. There was some debate in the summit. Someone had raised the comment that, can we stop blaming apartheid for things? Can we stop saying, oh, apartheid, every time and use it as, quote unquote, an excuse?
Yes.
But the truth is, we arrived here a deeply wounded and scarred
burdened
people.
Burdened and everything.
Yes. Apartheid, you know, demasculinized. Oh, my English is broken at this time of the evening.
It has run out of bundles.
It has run out of bundles.
It's okay.
But has done that to men. And I think black men in this country suffered enormously and had their masculinities ripped away from them and crushed.
Yes.
And I think that the recovery of that is a long one, but then it knocks onto the next generation. So now you've got transgenerational trauma passed on from great grandfathers to fathers to sons to the young men we have today. And women are in parallel with that, inheriting a burden alongside men. And so when we talk about Pillar Four's work, yes, we're responding to GBV, but GBV is in part a manifestation of the wounding that has come transgenerationally.
Yes.
For a nation that actually has 300 years of history, just apartheid, it's 300 years of colonialist history that we're sitting with the ramifications of today. So that's a bit of a simplification. We know that's not the only cause of GBV, but it interplays with other things. In a nutshell, Pillar Four is very much about collaboration between these civil society organizations. We desperately want the private sector to come and join us, collaborate strongly with government to provide access for the community to healing spaces and places and services.
I listened to one of the business panelists on today, later around 4 o'clock or so. And she was being, as her words were saying, she was saying, she's going to be brutally honest to say, business does not have trust in the processes. And I am not sure why would that be when we have done so much and when there's so much good leadership. Would you maybe... I don't know, just throw it on you, Dr. Shaida, as well as Tracy and Busi, to say, you convince a business person to have trust in something so big?
I think just looking at the historical process and where there's been now administration of funds, so one cannot paint everybody with the same brush. And I think that's the kind of response that is elicited because of the few rotten eggs in the actual container. And I think we need to, again, communicate, engage in dialogue, but we need to also have more evidence-based responses, so people can actually see pre-test, post-test, impact of interventions, impact of the work that is being done on the ground, because the input, output, and desired outcomes that are presented would certainly instill a sense of confidence, a vote of confidence in the to the private sector to invest in GBVF. So I do believe that there needs to be more rigorous engagement, and obviously we cannot under-promise and over-deliver. I mean, I would say not over-promise and under-deliver, but under-promise and over-deliver, where the facts, the impact, and the outcomes can speak for itself, to ensure that there is more rigor in investing in this process. Because if we want to break the silence and violence, we have to invest not only in terms of resources like personnel and programs and monitoring and evaluation, but money has to come from somewhere, the private sector. Thank you
very much, Tracy. Your chance, your job at this perspective.
I mean, Shahida's articulated it beautifully, so I don't blame them for that initial knee-jerk reaction that says, I don't trust, you know, the structures, and potentially because of some historical mismanagement of funds, and we all read the papers, so we know. But what I will say is that not responding to GBV is an escalating economic crisis. If most we simplify definitely. It and we say that... So let's assume half the population are women, and let's assume half of that half is being subjected to some sort of domestic violence or GBV of some sort. And let's assume half of the half, so now we're on 25% of women, are in severely distressing situations. It's costing us billions to provide medical care for them, to give them time off work. They can't attend their education, which means we're depriving the country of skills and talents because these women are not getting access to the workforce. They can't go to school. They're being locked in through. And GBV, can I remind the listeners, it's not just physical violence. It's that list of things you can get a protection order for, right? Yes. So it includes an economic, a financial abuse. So you're denying someone access to funds. It's physical, it's emotional, it's psychological. There's a list of things.
Yes, yes.
And so any of those things would qualify. But if we don't respond as the private sector and literally put the money where the mouth is, you can't have 16 days of activism, and you can't do 16 days, and for the whole rest of the year you ignore the problem.
Exactly.
Because it didn't go away for the rest of the year. Yeah. In fact, sometimes during 16 days of activism, it gets worse.
It gets highlighted more.
It does. But not only does it get highlighted, it actually escalates, because women become resistant now to situations they've been tolerating. There's some pushback and things escalate. But if corporates don't put their money where their mouth is, the economic crisis could collapse the country's economy. It's as simple as that. All so right. Their emotions need not play a part in it. They can make it as an economic decision.
All right. We left with 2 minutes to the end of the show. But now I would like Sis Busi to emphasize on the contact as well as the interaction with the GBV Command Center. If you can just advise us, and also maybe encourage those who still think twice to say, do I call Sis Busi? Nah. They're going to ask me a whole bunch of questions that I don't want to even... How do you encourage somebody to take responsibility and just call?
I would just encourage everyone, Lose Makai.
Even if you don't have a problem, right?
Even if you don't have a problem. Because as I did say, we've got three types of callers. We've got the consent callers, the victims, and also the perpetrators. So whoever is experiencing or is observing GBV happening somewhere, pick up your phone, call the command center. We are there to assist, as we are also operating under Pillar 4 of the NSP to ensure that we respond. We offer psychosocial support to the victims and also all those that have affected. Because if one person is affected, there's a whole number of people that are affected. Exactly. The number to call is 0800-428-428. 24 hours a day, 365 days in a year, we are there to offer support and care for the community of South Africa in all official languages. We are there and available at all the times.
Do you have text services? Because we do have people who cannot actually voice themselves out.
Yes, we do have. Mm-hmm. We do have USSD, that is the please call me.
Mm-hmm.
You dial *120*7867#, mm-hmm. and then a social worker will call you back. We also have a Skype line for the community, the deaf community who cannot speak.
Yes.
We have trained social workers who can sign and offer counseling services where you download Skype and then you type in a help me GPV. Then a social worker will respond back to you. And then we have an SMS line where you just SMS help to 31531 and then a social worker will then communicate with you through those channels.
All right. Thank you so very much, Osbusi.
Lastly,
Dr. Omar, just your word on the future that is being created by the second summit. Are we looking in any type of hope in changing South Africa to be better compared to it being the capital of violence, femicide, gender-based violence and all that? Because I read the reports here and every time South Africa comes out tops. Where are we going?
Well, if I look at the stats, yes, certainly it's very discouraging, it's very depressing. But the fact that we are now bringing boys and men on board, we're not throwing money at the problem, we're looking at solutions, and they are becoming... We are bringing them in as part of the solution. If we want to disrupt this cycle, this intergenerational pattern of violence, we have to bring them in to this space to actually work towards a safer South Africa, violence-free South Africa. So I am actually quite hopeful and optimistic that things will improve, but we need to work hard at it and we need to work together in collaboration and coordination.
Thank you so very much. Busisiwe Nkonyana, she is the Social Work Supervisor for Gender-Based Violence Command Center, and Dr. Shaida Omar, Director of the Teddy Bear Clinic, and also Tracy Cotton, the CEO of the Mental Wellness Initiative. I got it right this time. Mental Wellness Initiatives and co-chair of Pillar 4, which speaks to healing, support, and what's the other one?
Response, care, and support.
Ladies, let me thank your presence, particularly mostly your contribution towards this topic. And may South Africa be prosperous through your contributions. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Omar. Thanks to Gavin Sadler, who made sure that the sound is very good. Ian Ramkrishna, thank you so very much. He was the one who was actually doing the interaction with you as Umlaleli Ekhaya. From me, Mosotho Stone, thank you so very much and good night.